From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Chris Cherniak. Nell Larson is away, cheering her dad on at the Boston Marathon. This week is Earth Week, and Saturday, April 22nd is Earth Day, of course, and there are many activities planned for Saturday, including the March on Science event scheduled for both Salt Lake City and here in Park City. Utah Clean Energy, a nonprofit that supports energy efficiency and renewable energy efforts, is having their own event down at the Hogle Zoo. It's one that focuses on electric vehicles and electric bikes. Clayton Johnson, project coordinator with UCE, joins me in the first half to talk about that event and the continued growth and popularity of e-vehicles and e-bikes. He'll also provide us some final numbers on their most recent program aimed at increasing residential solar installations. Then in the second half of the show, U.S. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke lifted a ban last week on motorized vehicles in some parts of Recapture Canyon, located down in southern Utah. Recapture Canyon was the site of 2014 ATV protest rides over government land management. The decision opens nearly 7 miles of trails to motorized vehicles at the north end of the canyon and the canyon's west rim. Neil Clark with the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance has been following this issue for years and joins me to discuss the DOI's decision and what it means to future efforts by the Department of Interior to change policy on access and use of public lands. All that and some news on Rocky Mountain Power. Last week, we mentioned their plan to build 1,100-megawatt wind farm and associated transmission lines in southwestern Wyoming. This project is part of a larger set of plans laid out in the company's Integrated Resource Plan, which is basically a document designed to explain what Rocky Mountain Power does and doesn't plan to do over the next 20 years. In addition to adding and refurbishing wind farms, Rocky Mountain Power also plans on retiring some coal-fired power units, a few within the next 5 years or so. I'll give you some of the encouraging details on that, and along with some other calendar events, including an interesting presentation tomorrow at Red Rock Brewing Company on new legislation directed at what HOAs can and cannot do when it comes to of several things, including solar panels. Now, we don't take phone calls during the show, but you can join in on today's discussion by posting your comments and questions to our Facebook page, KPCW This Green Earth. Our connections with and impacts upon the environment, that's what This Green Earth is all about. Stay with us.
Hey, this is Nick Spitzer. Join me here on KPCW for American Roots, our weekly two-hour music program from New Orleans. We bring you a wide range of American music, Sunday mornings at 11 a.m., supported by Donna Van Buren and Greater Park City Properties. American Roots, only in Park City, only on KPCW.
This is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We are committed to serving Park City and are proud supporters of KPCW. More information at bhhsutah.com or one of our 24 offices throughout Summit and Wasatch Counties.
Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak. Nell Larson is away this week. She'll be back next week. And joining me on the phone is Clayton Johnson. He's a project coordinator with Utah Clean Energy, and he's here to talk to us a little bit about an event they got coming up down at the Hogle Zoo in celebration of Earth Day, and also some other items, news events coming out of Utah Clean Energy. Clayton, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Chris.
So let's start with some of the results, if you have them in front of you. With respect to Summit Community Solar, Mountain Town Community Solar Program, what were some of those numbers? How did they pan out?
So through the Mountain Town Community Solar Program, there were 110 homes that contracted to go solar through the program. I believe all of which have been installed by this point, for a total of just over 750 kilowatts. So just a little over three quarters of a megawatt of new solar energy in Summit and Wasatch counties through the program.
Okay, so those are homes throughout Summit and Wasatch County. And what and what was the benefit of going through Mountain Town Solar?
So we were able to offer a simplified process. So the Utah Clean Energy and the program's steering committee worked together to select a solar installer for the program and to narrow the equipment options offered through the program down to a few really good industry standard options so that it made the process easier for people. And then we were also able to negotiate a discount from the solar installer, which is Alpenglow Solar based in Summit County. We were able to offer that discount based on a bulk purchase model. So essentially, we were able to drive down the price by the large volume of customers that we were able to bring in through the program.
Okay. So this wasn't the first time you had offered this program. You had done this previously up here in Summit County, at least. Is that correct?
That's correct. In 2013... we had it was Utah Clean Energy's second community solar program called Summit Community Solar. In that year, I believe we helped about 60 homes install about 300 kilowatts of solar.
Okay. So a healthy increase from that program to this one.
A big increase from 2013. And that's on par with what we're seeing with the solar industry in general in Utah. More and more people adopting solar at a faster rate.
And am I correct that there are both state and federal tax credits that can be applied to solar installation?
That's correct. That's correct. The federal tax credit is 30% of the total cost of the installation with no cap. We'll stay at that rate through 2019, and then that will begin to step down by about 5% each year until 2021, when it will default to a 10% tax credit. And then there's also the state tax credit for solar, which is 25% of the total cost with a cap of $2,000. And just during this past legislative session, there were some changes made to that tax credit as well, so that it will begin stepping down over the next 2 years on the same schedule as the federal tax credit. So both of those at their current rate for the next year or so, and then we'll begin to step down.
Okay, so stepping down, like you say, the federal tax rate will step down, but kind of bottom out, let's say, at around 10% in 2021?
I believe that's right.
From 30%. It's not going to go to zero. Is that the same thing with the state tax credit, or is that one going to sunset entirely?
I believe it sunsets entirely.
Yeah. Okay. And again, that's over the same time period, roughly 2021, the end of 2021. So, you know, obviously, you know, now's the time, right? It's always now's the time to act. If you're still interested in employing solar panels on your rooftops or backyards or so, any type of installation, because these credits will phase out. Any idea why these credits are being phased out? I don't want to get into a big political conversation, but what's the impetus behind this?
I believe it's people that are looking at the issue from a fiscal perspective that are concerned with, federal and state budgets and tax credits and the impacts that those have on budget is really the rationale behind stepping those down.
Okay. I agree. Of course, this is the same state that seems to like offer tax credits to industry and stuff as an incentive. In this case, these are tax credits that are going to phase out for solar energy. Systems. Are there plans then to have another bulk solar purchase program in the future?
No, we don't have any firmed up plans to offer another program. We'd certainly like to. We've had a total of six community solar programs since 2011, and we've helped just shy of 1,000 homes go solar through our community solar program. So we'd definitely like to do it again and continue the success of the program. And it would certainly make a lot of sense to offer the program once those tax credits start to step down, because people will, you know, need those discounts more than ever.
Right.
So it's definitely something that we'll be looking at and looking for an opportunity to partner with someone on to offer another round of the program. But no firm plans just yet.
Now, those six programs were held throughout the state, or were they just kind of focused in certain counties?
Throughout the state to some extent. So we've had several rounds of the program that have been based in Salt Lake City, but kind of available to the surrounding counties. We've also had a program that was based up in Weber County that was run through Weber State University. And was available to surrounding counties in northern Utah. But for the most part, it's probably a 6 to 7 county area around Salt Lake County.
Right. Okay. So to kind of wrap this up, the cost associated with installing solar has come down on a unit per unit basis, per kilowatt hour, per kilowatt basis. There's an economy of scale there that's going on. And so that's encouraging for people who are still interested in installing solar on their rooftop, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
The price has been coming down. We're seeing that it's coming down slightly slower than it was a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
but it is still coming down.
Okay. And I add that Rocky Mountain Power recently, and this is a little news item off your Utah Clean Energy website, Rocky Mountain Power awarded Blue Sky funding, that's their program, for three solar projects. Sam Pete Middle School will receive a little over $500,000 to build a 206-kilowatt solar array, as well as a 32-kilowatt-hour battery storage system and electric vehicle charging station at their school. So that's encouraging. The Blue Sky program also awarded $56,000 to help install a 41-kilowatt solar array at the Vernal Area Chamber of Commerce. Interesting. Chambers building on Vernal's Main Street will also have kiosks so visitors can learn how the solar panels are producing energy for the facility. And finally, the Da Vinci Academy of Science and Arts has been awarded $164,000 to build a 65-kilowatt solar array. The solar panels will provide about 89,000 kilowatt hours each year, about 13% of the charter school's energy needs. So there's other things going on. Rocky Mountain Power doing what they can here and there to help promote solar energy. So gotta like that, Clayton.
Yeah, definitely. It's great to see that the utility is stepping up and helping entities around the state install more solar. And I think we're going to continue to see more of that. So it's really great.
All right. Just joining us, we're speaking with Clayton Johnson. He's a project coordinator with Utah Clean Energy, and we're talking about the latest community bulk solar purchasing program they held. 110 homes over this past year installed solar panels, equating to roughly 750 kilowatts of electricity. So all very encouraging. Now, let's turn... Oh, one other thing I want to mention while we're at it, and this is pretty interesting. There is a HOA 2017 legislative update seminar being hosted tomorrow, Wednesday, April 19th at 6 p.m. at the Red Rock Brewing Company. Now, I mention this because there was some legislation adopted this past session by the state, which will impact HOAs in a number of ways, including with respect to the installation of solar panels. Are you familiar with that at all, Clayton?
To some extent, yes.
Okay. So basically, it kind of outlines what HOAs can and can't do when homeowners want to install solar panels. It lessens the hurdles that homeowners might have to take that HOAs apply to wanting to install panels. Is that correct?
That's right. So it tries to take the concerns of both both groups into account, both, you know, homeowners associations and, you know, individual homeowners that want to install solar. So it essentially says that there's only a certain percentage of cost that an HOA can require a homeowner to add on to their total system installation costs to meet the HOA's standards for solar installations. So it kind of puts a cap on how much restrictions an HOA can put on a homeowner for installing solar in their communities.
Right. So perhaps in the past, HOAs could say, well, you know, they're unattractive. And you know, so they're aesthetically unpleasing. So we don't want them. But they HOAs can't really use that argument anymore. But in any case, you can learn the details from HOA attorneys Melissa Davidson and Robert Rossing again at 6 p.m. at Red Rock Brewing Company to learn about significant changes to condominium and community association laws enacted by state legislature this past session. And they'll include everything from solar panels to construction defect litigation, nightly rental advertising, and board decision making. And most importantly, they'll learn about the pitfalls of conducting HOA business via email. So a little public service announcement there. Clayton, indulge me on that. But the solar panel one will be interesting to learn more about. So, hey, we got a few more minutes. Let's turn our attention to the event you're hosting down at the Hogle Zoo, focusing on e-vehicles and electric bikes. Tell us about that.
That's correct. So this Saturday at Utah's Hogle Zoo, we'll be launching our Zoom Go Electric program, which is a partnership between Utah Clean Energy and Utah's Hogle Zoo, which will offer a streamlined process for purchasing electric vehicles and e-bikes at a discounted price. So it's essentially the same model as the community solar program that we were just discussing, where people are able to pool their purchasing power and receive discounts on the electric vehicles and bike and electric bikes that they're purchasing from the electric vehicle dealers and the bike shops that are participating in the program. So this Saturday at Utah Hogle Zoo, they're having their Party for the Planet event, which is an Earth Day celebration. So Utah Clean Energy will be there, and we will have several of the vehicles that are offered through the program and several of the e-bikes that are offered through the program on display for people to check out and learn more about. You can connect with the EV dealers and bike shops if you want to learn more about the different models that are offered through the program. And it's also a great opportunity to talk to the representatives at Utah Clean Energy about how the program works and exactly what you need to do to get signed up for the program.
And so do you know what automakers are involved in the program?
What vehicles? We do. So we have both Nissan and Ford participating in the program, as well as a used car dealership that specializes in electric vehicles that would be offering other models outside of Nissan and Ford.
Wow. Used car dealership that focuses on electric vehicles down in Salt Lake City.
They're actually located in Utah County.
Okay.
And I think when they first started out, they focused on natural gas vehicles.
Mm.
But since then, they have transitioned to electric vehicles.
Okay. So, again, it's Nissan vehicles and Chevrolet. So that's probably
Ford.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
So it's probably the Leaf, the Nissan Leaf. And I'm trying to what vehicle does Ford produce that's electric?
So the Ford C-Max and the Ford Fusion, which are both plug-in hybrids.
Oh, okay.
So they have the all-electric range, and then after the battery is depleted, it switches over to a hybrid engine like a Prius.
Okay. So it's not the Prius, it's not the Volt, which is a Chevrolet product, or the Bolt, which is a Chevrolet product. And, of course, it's not the Tesla. But
correct,
there's opportunities to get a reduced rate, a reduced cost going through your program on electric vehicle and electric bikes.
That's correct. So the discounts on electric vehicles are up to 25% off the MSRP. And then the discounts on electric bikes are up to 45% off the original price.
Wow.
So we were able to negotiate some great discounts through the program.
Okay. And again, that's down at the Hogle Zoo starting when?
Starting April 22nd, this Saturday. The event starts at 10 a.m., and then we will be speaking to the crowd at 12:30.
12:30, okay. Fantastic. And I guess this information is available on your website, too?
That's correct. The program's website is zoomgoelectric.org, and that's a great place to learn about the program and how it works. You can also sign up for the program starting April 22nd there at the website and RSVP for one of our two upcoming workshops on the website.
All right, zoomgoelectric.org. And while I'm at it, another shameless plug, we have an electric bike store here in town, Pedego, and they had their grand reopening just last week. They're located at 1890 Bonanza Drive, and they rent and sell electric bikes. Go down there and check them out if you're interested in purchasing. I know a couple people who have them. They love them. They're happy they've purchased them. So learn more about electric bikes here in Park City at Pedego Electric Bikes. So, Clayton, that's it. We want to thank you again for spending the time to chat with us about solar and electric vehicles and bikes. And once more, your website, Utah Clean Energy's website.
UtahCleanEnergy.org.
Simple enough. Great website, lots of topical news and issues covered. And as always, we thank you for taking the time to chat with us on This Green Earth.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Chris.
All right, Clayton. Let's take a break for a couple of underwriters and sponsors. And when we come back, we'll be speaking with Neil Clark from the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance about the recent decision to open up portions of Recapture Canyon to ATVs. It's This Green Earth.
Hi, I'm Carolyn with Recycle Utah. Did you know that we accept light bulbs for recycling? Any compact fluorescent light bulb, the coiled bulbs, or the fluorescent tubes up to 4 feet long are accepted at the recycling center.
Recycle Utah is your community nonprofit recycling center since 1990 and a KPCW supporter.
This is Brenda with Republic Services, your local provider for recycling and garbage collection. Information about what is acceptable to put in your curbside recycling bin can be found at summitcountyrecycles.org. Please help Summit County be clean. Remember to recycle.
Miller Orthodontics supports KPCW and their involvement with area youth and teens. Speaking of youth, did you know Invisalign has a specific type of aligner just for teens? Over 3/4 of our Invisalign patients are 19 or younger. More information about Invisalign Teen is available at m2ortho.com.
This is Allison Kulo with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau provides your business with benefits from lodging projections, educational videos, group sales leads, and a listing on the top travel site for Park City, and much more. Becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining can be found at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak. Nell Larson is away this week. The U.S. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke lifted a ban last week on motorized vehicles in some parts of Recapture Canyon, located down in southern Utah. Recapture Canyon was the site of a 2014 ATV protest ride over government land management. Neil Clark with the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance has been following this issue for years and joins me to discuss the DOI's decision and what it means to perhaps future efforts by the Department of Interior to change policy on access and use of public lands. Neil, thanks so much for joining me this morning on This Green Earth.
Thanks for having me.
So I gave a little brief background on the original reason behind this decision made last week. Can you fill us a little more? This has been going on for years, since 2014.
Well, it's really been going on since about 2005, when there was originally some illegal construction that happened in the canyon in order to facilitate ATV access into the canyon. So that was really the beginning, and that resulted in some extensive fines for the perpetrators of that activity, and then really started a much longer process that sort of culminated with this recent decision.
Okay, and so what was the source of the protest, the reasons behind the protest? What were they being denied?
Well, in 2005, as I alluded to, there was some illegal construction that happened to get ATV access into the canyon, which was then followed by a right-of-way application filed by San Juan County to develop an ATV system, including the bottom of the canyon. Unfortunately, what happened as a result of that illegal activity is that BLM issued, in 2007, issued a closure order in order to protect cultural resources in the canyon bottom and on the rims as well. And that, you know, the order from BLM was necessary to ensure that they could deal with the adverse impacts from the original construction as well as ongoing impacts from motorized use in the canyon. And so that closure is really what initially upset the county. They were looking for a right-of-way in the canyon, and BLM said, you know, we cannot grant you right-of-way right now. We have impacts happening to cultural resources, and we need to make a prudent decision to close the canyon until we can figure out what action we should take in order to meet our obligations under federal law to protect cultural resources. And so that started a long, deliberative process with the BLM. And then ultimately, in 2014, San Juan County, led by Commissioner Phil Lyman, decided that, you know, he had had enough of waiting for BLM and decided to lead this illegal protest ride into the canyon, which ultimately resulted in additional damage to cultural resources, which in turn lengthened the process that they were complaining about at the outset.
So the damage to cultural resources took what shape? I mean, was it literally vandalism or what?
Well, in 2005 with the construction, there was berming and hardening, and they put a bridge in to cross for access, and it destabilized cultural sites, went through cultural sites. So it took a host of different ways in which it had damaged cultural sites, but ultimately 2005 resulted in a couple $100,000 worth of damage, and then the same with the illegal protest ride in 2014 also resulted in significant damage, much more damage as far as the dollar amount than either the two gentlemen in 2005 or Commissioner Lyman were required to pay as part of their the punitive damages associated with their activity.
Right. Okay. So they were fined, but the bulk of the cost associated with this damage was paid by the government?
Absolutely. The taxpayers.
Okay.
You know, for example, in 2005, we're talking upwards over $300,000 worth of damage. The fines that were levied against the two individuals culpable was $35,000. So still a significant punitive fine, but not something that covers the true cost of the activities that occurred.
Okay, so they did they have to deconstruct the bridges and block off the roads that they had put in, or?
Yeah, BLM went in shortly thereafter and did some emergency remediation of the sites to make sure that there wasn't continued damage that occurred. And so there was sort of some quick action by BLM to make sure they could sort of stop that damage from continuing.
Okay. And the reason, again, for the Phil Lyman and his supporters for doing this is that they felt that this is their property, this is their land, in a sense, that they should have access to these lands with their motorized vehicles.
Absolutely. You know, there's a strong thread of anti-federal government and anti-federal public land sentiment in southern Utah and throughout Utah, really, as far as the elected leaders in the counties and the state legislature and even up to, you know, our federal delegation.
All right. And just to remind people, this is Recapture Canyon. Where is Recapture Canyon located?
So Recapture Canyon is located just east of Blanding, Utah. It borders Blanding almost immediately on its eastern boundary.
Okay. So if you just join us, we're speaking with Neil Clark. He's with the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, and we're talking about the recent decision by the Department of Interior to lift the ban on motorized vehicle access to at least portions, let's say, of Recapture Canyon. So let's talk about what Ryan Zinke did last week.
Yeah, so the decision from BLM last week, from our perspective, is a bit of a mixed bag. You know, on the good side of things, you know, BLM decided to keep the bottom of Recapture Canyon closed to ATV use and other motorized access. You know, this is good. This is BLM not rewarding illegal behavior by designating an ATV trail in the canyon. Mm-hmm. That's what the county wanted ultimately, and that's what they were organizing their illegal ride around. You know, it's also a sign that BLM is acknowledging the significant impact that ATVs can have on cultural resources. And it's also nice to see, you know, BLM taking decisive action, even in the face of very significant pressure from San Juan County and other political leaders in the state to protect cultural natural resources over, you know, just tacking towards what the county was demanding. And I say it's a mixed bag because as part of that decision, BLM did decide to keep the canyon bottom closed, but also has decided to designate motorized routes on the western rim of the canyon. This is really an unnecessary decision. We're talking about a BLM office in San Juan County that has already designated almost 3,000 miles of motorized routes. So there's no shortage of access for motorized recreationalists. And really, I think it's something we see often with the agencies in Utah, and that's really trying to appease the counties through giving them a little bit of what they want. And I think we see time and time again that this is an approach that doesn't work. And I think you're going to see that as far as how this decision plays out with San Juan County and other leaders in the state.
Were the ATV or Phil Lyman, et cetera, were they pleased with this decision?
Phil Lyman, initially, his response was that he was pleased, that he was happy to see a decision from the agency and that would allow the county to take any, you know, additional action if they deem it necessary. I think others down there have not been pleased with the decision. You know, as I mentioned, the county has long wanted an ATV trail in the bottom of this canyon. Unfortunately for the county, that trail conflicts with protecting cultural resources, and in this situation, BLM cited for protection of resources over opening up more motorized routes in southern Utah.
And when we say motorized vehicles, I know we've been talking ATVs, but it's not just limited to ATVs, is it?
Well, most ATV routes and trails are also open to full-size vehicles. I mean, that's not every single route, but the canyon, you know, they were hoping to have ATV access, but on the rims above, there'll be ATV access as well as some motorized. When I say motorized, I mean full-size vehicles and ATVs.
Motorcycles?
Motorcycles on routes that are designated open, unless they're otherwise limited, saying that motorcycles can't ride them,
right.
Typically motorcycles are allowed on those routes as well.
Oh, okay. So let's then kind of broaden this conversation with this decision. Do you see other lands at risk or other lands that people will want to redesignate for a motorized vehicle access?
I don't know if this decision is going to prompt others to push for more motorized access. I mean, that's something that's always occurring. It's a constant tension with the agency, how to balance multiple uses and different types of recreation. I think if someone out there is thinking that they can take illegal activity in order to push forward their vision of how they want to see the land managed, this decision doesn't give them a lot of hope. Hmm. If you look historically at how this process has unfolded, the two gentlemen that originally constructed for ATV access in the bottom of the canyon, you know, they were fined $35,000. Commissioner Lyman, he spent time in jail as a result of his illegal protest ride. And at the end of the day, they did not get the decision that they really were hoping for, which was to have ATVs in the bottom of Recapture Canyon. And so I'm hopeful that this sends a sign that, you know, that BLM and other federal agencies are not going to tolerate illegal activity on public land, that there is a process that you have to go through if you want to propose new ATV trails, mountain bike trails, you know, take your pick. But there is a process. It's a deliberative process. It can be a slow process. But BLM is managing for a lot of different uses, conservation and protection of natural and cultural resources being a part of that balance. And so you're not always going to get what you want, and it's going to take time. And going out and doing things illegally it really isn't going to give you the outcome that you want, and it may end up costing you a lot of money or putting you in jail for a bit of time.
Right. So like you said earlier, it is kind of a mixed bag decision. I know Ryan Zinke's only been in at his desk for a couple of months or so. Did this decision surprise you in any way?
I don't know if the decision surprised me. This is something that's been in the works for a long time. I mean, if you go back even to the original closure order, that was 2007 and under the Bush administration. So, you know, this is a decision that had been worked on primarily through the Obama administration, you know, carrying on into the Trump administration. And I don't know if it's surprising as much as it's consistent with what we have seen. I think it's the kind of decision that could have easily come from the Obama administration as well.
Hmm. Interesting. So then, again, Ryan Zinke, the head of the Department of Interior, again, he's just only been around for a couple months, but any sense of what direction he might be taking the DOI and the BLM in?
You know, it's hard to say. It is early, but I think if you just tracking some of the orders that have come out, you know, regarding coal leasing and other issues facing the West, and generally the flavor of this administration, I can't say that we're overly optimistic that this is going to be a Department of Interior and a greater administration that puts an emphasis on conservation. I think you're going to see a great emphasis on resource extraction, probably motorized recreation, and other, you know, damaging, impactful activities on public lands throughout the West.
Right. Okay. We got a few more minutes, Neil. Any other issues that SUA has on its front burner right now that you'd like to share?
Well, you know, we're really have been a great proponent of Bears Ears National Monument. We're really happy to see that was designated by President Obama. There's a lot of unknowns as far as how this administration is going to move forward with that designation. I would just encourage folks to contact Department of Interior, contact the White House, the representatives, and tell them that you really appreciate the monument. It's important for tribes. It's important for cultural resources, and it's something that is going to have a really lasting impact in southern Utah. And it's something that should stay, and is going to be a real benefit to the state.
And here, when you say representatives, that's everyone from our senators, Hatch and Lee, to our congressman. Our local congressman up here is Rob Bishop, and he can be contacted at robbishop.house.gov. And so reach out to them, and yeah, like Neil says, share your thoughts and concerns with respect to Bears Ears and the threats associated with perhaps rescinding. That would be a very complicated process to revoke or otherwise deny the Obama administration's efforts or their announcement to make Bears Ears a national monument. But you can't put anything beyond past this administration that they may try something that's never been done before.
That's absolutely true, and groups like Sue and others will be there to challenge them if they do so.
All right. So last couple minutes, give us a little information on Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, your website.
Yeah, it's www.sua.org. You can find us there. More information, we have a volunteer program starting this year. So if you want to get involved, check it out there. Lots of information on Bears Ears, America's Red Rock Wilderness Act, which is the cornerstone wilderness legislation for Utah. And you can see everything else that we're working on a daily basis.
And I know it's Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, but your mission and your goals and objectives cover all of Utah.
That's correct. We are focused on protecting the remaining wildlands throughout Utah, ideally through wilderness designation, but focused on conservation.
All right. And do you have events scheduled for Earth Day up here or elsewhere?
That would be a good thing to check our website for.
They
may have some things scheduled in Salt Lake. I'm down in Moab, and I'm a little out of that loop.
Yes. Okay. Simple enough. Go to suwa.org and learn more about what Sue is all about and their events coming up for Earth Day. Neil Clark, again, he is the Wild Lions Program Director and House Counsel for the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. Thanks again for joining us this morning, Neil.
Thanks, Chris.
All right. Hey, let's take a break for a couple of underwriters, sponsors. And when we come back, I got a bunch of news items and calendar of events to cover. It's This Green Earth.
Support for KPCW programming has been provided by the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting Utah's remaining Red Rock Wilderness lands. SUWA and Utah's Red Rock Wilderness need your support now more than ever. To learn more about how you can become involved, please visit the SUWA website at suwa.org.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Chris Cherniak. Nell Larson's away. She'll be back next week. I got a couple of news items and a bunch of calendar events items to go through with respect to Earth Day. Something we covered last week, and I'm sure everyone's read about this, is that the White House and Scott Pruitt, who heads up the EPA, proposes large cuts to the Environmental Protection Agency. They seek to shrink spending by 31%. That's annual spending by 31% from $8.1 billion to $5.7 billion. And in the process, eliminate almost 4,000 jobs from a total staff of 15,000. Just to give you an example of what these cuts will look like, here's two programs that are basically under the knife. Tap water. Flint, Michigan is still reeling from its tainted water crisis, and unsafe levels of lead have turned up in tap water in city after city, not Park City, though. Still, the administration is looking to decrease grants that help states monitor public water systems by almost a third, from $102 million last year to $71 million in this proposed budget. Public Water System Supervision Grant Program has been critical in making sure communities have access to safe drinking water. Much of the risk to the country's water supply stems from its crumbling public water infrastructure, a network of pipes, treatment plants, and other facilities built decades ago. Although Congress banned lead pipes in 1986, between 3.3 and 10 million older ones remain, again, not in Park City, primed to leach lead into tap water. So this effort continues to try to remove old lead lines around the country, but that efforts will be severely curtailed under this proposed budget. Here's another one. Under civil and criminal enforcement, sharp cuts in the agency's enforcement programs could curtail its ability for the EPA to police environmental offenders and impose penalties. That's what they do. The budget proposal reduces spending on civil and criminal enforcement by almost 60% to $4 million from a combined $10 million last year. It also eliminates roughly 200 jobs. Now, just last week, the agency fined Sunoco Pipeline, a subsidiary of the operator behind the Dakota Access Pipeline, nearly $1 million over a 2012 spill. The spill sent 1,950 barrels of gasoline. By the way, a barrel is 42 gallons, so they like to, always like to talk in terms of barrels. It sounds less. So it's actually 42 gallons per barrel. So it's roughly 8,000 gallons of gasoline were spilled by Sunoco Pipeline into two waterways near Wellington, Ohio, forcing the evacuation of 70 people and millions of dollars to clean that up. So that's an example of enforcement that the EPA does and that is at risk of them not doing under this proposed budget. One enforcement activity that could be set for an increase is the security for Scott Pruitt, the new EPA administrator. The agency has asked for 10 additional full-time staff members for a round-the-clock security detail, a first for an EPA chief who usually has only door-to-door protection, and more than doubling the agency's infrastructure and operations staff. I'll be back with a couple more news items, counter events. It's This Green Earth.
I'm Beth Lohman from Park City Mountain and KPCW's sponsor. Epic Promise grants focus on youth programs and environmental initiatives that impact our community. Grants fund programs that help kids achieve great things in the classroom and develop a passion for the outdoors by engaging guests, our local community, and employees to create a more promising future. More information at epicpromise.com.
All right. Breaking news of sorts. Right? What do we have? We have Rob Bishop supposed to have a town hall meeting tonight.
That's right. Rob Bishop's supposed to have a town hall meeting tonight. A group called Indivisible Ogden invited him. He will not be there.
He will not be there. Well, who will be then?
Good question. They are going to have several experts to talk about the three issues they want to address, public lands being the big one.
Right.
So I thought your listeners would really want to know about that. So they have a couple of speakers, and Chris, I'm sorry, I don't know who they are.
All right.
They're going to talk about public lands, health care, and immigration, and all comments will go to Bishop's office. They're going to videotape the whole town hall and then deliver that video to the congressman.
Okay. So, again, where is this being held?
Pleasant Valley Library in Ogden at 6:30 tonight. And there's a whole group of Summit County residents who are meeting at Quinn's Junction from 4:30 to 4:45 this afternoon. There's going to be a bus there. I'm not sure who's providing the bus,
wow,
but it'll be $20 to get on that bus.
Right.
And then anyone who wants to carpool, they'll be organizing carpools there as well.
So that's fantastic. And this is all to go to the quote-unquote Rob Bishop town hall meeting. Did he give any reason why he's not going?
Another good question. We have been trying to get any comment from Bishop's office. They will not comment about what his schedule is. This is a district work period. This is a time set aside for congressmen to leave and go to their districts and to not have to be in Washington, D.C. Rob Bishop was not in Utah that we know of for the February work district period, nor do we know if he's going to be here for the April one.
Right.
Someone from Indivisible Ogden said a member of his staff said he will be in Minnesota today doing some committee work. As we all know, he is the chair of the Natural Resources Committee in the House of Representatives.
Right.
I looked on that webpage. There's no public schedule for that committee. So
really?
If he's in Minnesota on committee work, I can't find evidence of that.
Or perhaps it's another Minnesota. Wherever you look, right? You haven't found it yet.
However many Minnesotas there are.
He is going to be somewhere at some time, but he will not be at his own town hall meeting, which has got to be highly unusual.
Well, I talked to Tal Adair, who's the head of the Summit County GOP party, and he made the point that, congressmen are busy people, and it may be expecting too much. He received an invitation from this group in early April, and Tal said, perhaps it was just too late to change his schedule.
All right. Fair enough. Once more, the details on if you're interested in going down by bus, meet at...
at Quinn's Junction, the dog park parking lot, between 4:30 and 4:45. And Cheryl Butler, who's the newly elected chair of the Summit County Democratic Party, she gave me that information. She's going to be there. I also talked to Josh Hobson, who is the newly elected secretary of the Summit County Democratic Party. And he said, he made an interesting comment. He said, you know, I expect that there are going to be a lot of Republicans there as well. Maybe people who voted for Bishop but did not vote for Trump. And he said he was looking forward to, he called it the liberal echo chamber of Park City, to go down to Ogden to hear what other constituents of Rob Bishop have to say about public lands, about health care, about immigration.
All right, great. Thanks, Renee, for sharing that.
Welcome.
And will that be posted on our website at all?
Or? The story's on our website right now.
KPCW.org. Thanks, Renee.
You're welcome.
One more break, and we got to start to wrap up. We'll be right back.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Hey, just a couple more minutes here. A couple of calendar events, ran out of time. Rancher, Farmer, Fisherman. That's a film being shown by the Park City Film Series this Thursday. At 6:30 p.m., it's a free screening presented in partnership with Swanner Preserve and Eco Center. The movie it was a Sundance Film Festival entry, and it's really fascinating. Out on America's vast working landscapes, the ranches of the Mountain West, the farmlands of the Great Plains, the waterways of the Mississippi Delta, a huge, largely hidden, and entirely unexpected movement is being born. Tens of thousands of heartland conservationists are leading some of the most consequential work in the nation to restore America's forests, grasslands, wildlife, soil, and fisheries. That's Rancher, Farmer, Fisherman being shown this Thursday at the Santee Auditorium, 6:30, and it's free. The other event that is free is the March for Science being held in Salt Lake City, but also up here in Park City. It's a celebration of our passion for science and a call to support and safeguard the scientific community. Park City joins the National Day of Science with great pride, and you can join in to a little march. Meet at the Brew Pub parking lot at 9 a.m. Saturday morning, and then you'll march down to the Santee Auditorium, where there will be a number of speakers holding 15-minute talks starting at 11:30. And it seems there's free lunch. Yay. So it's this talks include you – Utah State University professor Rob Davies, who's been on the show talking about climate issues, and Utah Physicians for Healthy Environment Brian Mensch. They're both scheduled to talk. Hey, it's time to wrap things up. Let me get my wrap-up music here. There we are. And, you know, I'll have to get to the Rocky Mountain Power story next week when Nell is back and some of the efforts they're making to increase their renewable sources of energy and decrease their coal sources of energy. It's at least encouraging. Let's thank our sponsors and underwriters who make this show possible. They include Recycle Utah, Republic Services, Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. Thank you. Vail Epic Promise. And also Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, and Park City Mountain. Again, you can join us and like us on Facebook at KPCW This Green Earth, or email us your thoughts and ideas at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.